Hello, listeners of Siouxland Catholic Radio. I'm so glad you set your dials to Channel 88.1 FM, KFHC Ponca Sioux City, and KOIA Storm Lake. You are listening to Faith in Action, and this is a public affairs program. It airs every Monday at 9 a.m., replays every Saturday at 7 p.m., and can also be found at fhcradio.com. Click on Listen Live and hit the podcasts, and there we are. So, I would thank you so much for listening. I'm Joanne Fox. I'm a Siouxland Catholic Radio board member, and I am the host for today's show. And in the studio with me, I have a longtime friend and compadre we're going to talk about the COVID virus today. So if that doesn't get you sitting up in your chair, I'm not sure what will. So I welcome to the studio Dr. Greg Romig. He and I taught at the same time out at Western Iowa Tech Community College, but he continues to teach out there. So welcome to the studio, Greg, and the program.
Thanks, it's good to be here today.
It's good to be anywhere, isn't it, today? Yes. Yeah, I often say that. Listeners are probably tired of hearing me say that old joke. I don't care. It is my show. So, Greg, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, where you went to school, stuff like that.
Sure. I grew up in eastern Pennsylvania. I was born in 1966. A little closer so you can get an idea about how old I am. I've always been interested in science, in particular biology. I ended up going to the University of Maine to get a master's in zoology. And then for some complicated reason, I decided I was going to try living in the upper Midwest here because I want to get out of the Northeast just to see what life was like in other parts of the country. So I ended up in North Dakota. And I got my doctorate degree from the University of North Dakota in biology. My primary area of interest was ecology, birds and fish. But, you know, over the years, you know, through a lot of the classes that I've taught, I've learned quite a bit about other aspects of biology as well.
What brought you to Sioux City then?
They hired me.
That's always good.
No, I was looking for a job. I'd been teaching with my now wife up in Winona, Minnesota, and at an academy, and they were having some financial issues. So I ended up looking for a job, but I wanted to stay in the region because I'd met my then wife, and I didn't want to venture too far away. So I landed here in Sioux City at Western Iowa Tech. And a year after that, there was a chemistry opening, and that was my wife's, her name's Renee, area of expertise, and she ended up joining me at Western Iowa Tech. And that was, I came there in 1999, and she came the following year. So we've been in Sioux City for 21 and 22 years.
Very good. Yes. And tell us a little about your faith journey.
I grew up as a Protestant, and was confirmed in a Protestant church, United Church of Christ. And that pretty much was, I was fairly active at times and not very active at other times, kind of ebbs and flows throughout my life. And then, let's see, it would have been about 2015, because of some changes I was seeing take place that maybe disturbed me a little bit, and the fact that my wife was a cradle Catholic, as they call her, I decided that since I knew quite a bit about Catholicism because of, you know, attending masses with her and learning, you know, asking questions from her, I decided that I was going to make the leap and become a Catholic. And I went through a year of RCIA and, it would have been Easter 2016 is when I was officially sworn in.
Okay. Not like holding up your hand in the jury box or anything like that, but darn close.
Yes,
did you pick, what saint's name did you pick?
Jeremiah was my confirmation.
Not the bullfrog.
Name. No. Although I am very fond of music from that era, as you well know.
I do know that.
But yes. I used Jeremiah as my confirmation name.
Okay. Yeah. And
it might have been inspired by that song.
And that's okay if it is. That's okay if it is. And again, listeners, I kind of made reference to the fact that we both taught out at Western Iowa Tech Community College. I, of course, did not teach anything remotely related to science because that's not my background. I taught mostly English composition, but then I also taught news writing and, well, just about anything they would throw at me because I was only an adjunct or a part-time person out there because I had full-time positions elsewhere. And it was a great experience, but yet another commonality that we had was when my son Eric attended Western Iowa Tech, he was interested in biochemistry. Mm-hmm. And so I believe he did have you for one of the sciences, mm-hmm. Greg.
Yeah,
probably biology, maybe, or see. Chemistry,
Eric. Eric was in genetics.
Okay, genetics.
And that was a course that was team taught by my wife and I. So I really only had him as a student for about 5 or 6 weeks,
but, which is plenty.
Yeah,
quite honestly. And then Renee also had him as a student in some sort of biochemistry. Yeah. I don't remember what it was.
She spent a lot of time. He spent a lot of time with Renee.
Yeah. So again, small world.
Yeah.
Very much so. But now we continue to, because I stepped away from teaching quite a few years ago, probably, 5 years ago, I stepped away just because, you know, things in my life were getting busier. And it's hard to grade 30 papers a week when you also have a full-time job. But we have connected, and somewhat Renee has too, because she's always there for you, with community theater.
Yes.
And we have done a number of shows together.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, now this summer, we have worked on railroad stories at the Sioux City Railroad Museum.
Yes, I had been inactive for a number of years. And then Joanna had contacted, I guess my wife first, about that they needed people to fulfill a part for an old railroad worker. And I knew I was going to have to be gone. I wasn't going to be around the entire summer, but it looked like I could be around enough to fill the part. And I just really love it. It's something unique. I love history, anything historical. I'm there. And it's been a very enjoyable activity every Saturday. I'm out there at the Railroad Museum dressed in 1919 railroad worker outfit and telling a very sad story. So we're going to be continuing with that a few more weeks and most likely bringing it back in future years. So that's been really enjoyable, something unique, being part of history, so to speak. It's well worth the time.
Absolutely, I would agree. Mm-hmm. And so, listeners, you probably have picked up a lot of times when I do this show, I bring people on that I have a connection with, and then we spend a great deal of time walking down memory lane and sharing with you our connections, which you may or may not be interested in. But again, since it is my show and I'm the host, mm-hmm. I can pretty much control the direction of the show. But we are here for a look at what has just been overwhelming in our lives the past couple of years, and that's the coronavirus, COVID-19, or whatever term you want to call it. And I asked Greg if he would come in because of his background in biology and chemistry and fill in the blank, sure. Other kind of science stuff. I think what has confused me a lot is, what is this virus? I know there are viruses associated with influenza, polio, smallpox, other diseases, but maybe you could explain to the listeners, maybe in layman's terms, what is a virus?
Yeah, sure. It's a fundamental question that I usually address very early in my biology class, because I think there's misunderstandings in general about the differences between bacteria and viruses, especially. And in biology is the study of living things. And we define what exactly it means to be alive. And animals, plants, fungi, things like mushrooms, yeast, single-celled organisms like paramecium and amoeba and bacteria, they're all considered living things primarily for two reasons. They're cellular. They're made of structures that are you know, pretty familiar to people that have taken biology classes called cells. Now, things like animals and plants are multicellular. That means bodies made of many, many cells, thousands or millions, or in our case, trillions of cells. And then there's single-celled organisms, certain things that live in ponds, algae, certain like paramecium, but bacteria are single-celled organisms. So being cellular, and we can see cells under a microscope. They're pretty small, but we can see them. Being cellular is pretty much being alive. And the other major part of being considered alive is you have to be independently replicating. That means capable of reproducing without using an outside agent, another organism. Viruses, by most standards, do not classify as living things. They have some features of living things, but the main two reasons they're not is because they're not cellular and they're not independently replicating, okay? And I guess I can address in a little bit more detail those two points. Living things are made of cells, but viruses are not made of cells. They're actually much smaller than a cell. That's why the existence of viruses wasn't really known until we invented decent quality microscopes, simply because prior to that, we couldn't see them. You could look at somebody that had tuberculosis or Clostridium or whatever, some sort of bacterial infection, and see the bacteria if we looked at the tissue sample. But with viruses, you couldn't see anything because they're so much smaller than bacteria. Now that we have powerful microscopes, electron microscopes, we can see what viruses actually look like. And they're quite a bit smaller than even the smallest cell.
Okay.
And when we say independently replicating, one virus cannot divide and produce more viruses or give birth to other viruses unless it takes over the cell of a living thing. They're sort of like pirates almost that board a ship and take it over. That's the way I like to think of them. So what they do, let's say you're infected with some sort of virus, COVID or whatever, influenza, or even something like rhinoviruses or adenoviruses that cause common colds. That virus essentially invades your cell, breaks through your cell wall, and gains access to the innards of your cell. And basically, it inserts some of its genetic material, like DNA or RNA, into one of your own cells and essentially takes it over and turns that cell into a factory that makes more viruses. So basically, it's like a hostile takeover.
Okay.
And that way, viruses can spread and infect other cells.
Okay. Well, listeners, you know this show. We're going to have to take a short break, and that's probably a good time to take a short break. That was really interesting because I did not really understand the difference between the viral and the bacterial infection. But we're going to get into just exactly why the virus seems to have had this hostile takeover of all of our bodies in the last couple of years. So this is Faith in Action, and we sure want you to stay tuned because we are going to be right back.